You're listening to Renegade Broadcasting. Welcome to the Solar Storm, and welcome to 2017, right here on RenegadeBroadcasting.com. This is your host, Kyle Hunt, coming to you on 1-1 January 1st. 2017 is going to be one interesting year. I know we're going to be doing a lot here at Renegade, and things are going to continue to get better and get bigger. I know that there are three wild cards in the lineup at the moment, but we've got those booked for a couple weeks now, and we've got a whole lot of great people who are interested in being a part of Renegade. So we're going to take it one step at a time, but 2017 will be a year where we assemble a really hard-hitting crew to continue to do what we've been doing for years. Now, I want to thank Chris and Nick for all the work that they do with this network. Nick Spiro is now the longest standing member of Renegade, other than myself. And then it's Chris. Actually, Charles. Excuse me. Charles has been here longer than both of them. But I think of the night shows a little bit differently than Charles in the morning. And they did a good job on the round table last night. Also, to all of the wildcard hosts who have been a part, really great job throughout the year. So many people to name. I'm not going to go through them all. So just know that I really do appreciate your work and look forward to hearing from you again in the future. Those really can be some really special slots during the week when somebody comes up, steps up to the plate, and really knocks it out of the park. Over at RenegadeTribune.com, a lot of great articles going up over there. And though we did have a bit of a Yule theme last week, I didn't really do anything special for 2017. Time moves onward, and so do we. We must be always looking forward and never celebrating needlessly, celebrating for the wrong reasons. Oh, it was very depressing to watch all the celebration this year with people thinking that they had won. We did it. We won. Oh, Trump won this primary. Oh, Trump got the nomination. Oh, Trump is president. We won. It's like the idiots who watch the Super Bowl, which is, of course, coming up, and I have no idea who's even doing anything with the NFL. And a lot of Americans don't either. But people will often say, oh, they lost, when talking about the team that they root for. But of course, they'll always say, we won. They want to distance themselves from defeat and get right in the inner circle for the victory. Oh, we did it. We president now. Of course, some of the people out there who are honest have seen the three Goldman Sachs picks in the Trump administration, have seen all of the Jewish influence, have seen all of the Israeli celebration, have seen the videos about Trump and Ivanka, have seen everything unfolding, as we have called it. Well, they're starting to see things a little bit differently. They are starting to realize that, hey, perhaps that this actually isn't our guy. Now, when somebody comes to this realization, they should ask themselves, how did I get here? Well, I was obviously led astray by my own mind, by those thought leaders who were out there. And then when you realize that, well, the vast majority of the alternative media, and particularly the nationalist circles, were promoting Trump endlessly and now kind of distancing themselves from him. It's about half and half. I've seen a bit of both. You know, people still on the Trump bandwagon and explaining, providing Hasbro for why his picks actually are pretty good. Yeah, I'll disagree with one over here, but you know, it's looking like 2017, we're really going to MAGA. Yeah, he met with the chief of Mossad, but he has to. He has to have good intelligence. What, are you going to go against the Israelis, you know, first thing, before even stepping into office? Now, you got to be practical here, right? We hear all of the excuses. I've heard every excuse in the book. But it's going to really become an interesting situation here with Trump, with Putin, and with Netanyahu forming, in my opinion, the new triumvirate. These three men together may very well be rulers of the Times New Roman Empire. I like that phrase, Times New Roman Empire. It's the black iron prison that Philip K. Dick in his wild hallucinations saw encompassing everything. The empire never ended. I like those books. In any event, what we're seeing also involves Erdogan and then some of the Asian players and all the rest. But the way I see it right now is that there is this triple alliance here forming, and it is very interesting. Now, I'm one who thinks that all of this that we see is theater. However, that does not mean that things can't get really hot, that there aren't real battles going on. What do they call operations, or rather, what do they call areas in war? They call it the theater of war, right? When you're in the theater of war. So it could be that there are legitimately factions out there who are battling with each other for the vision and control of the Jew world order. It might be that, yes, indeed, there is a big Jew above them. I call it Draco Jew. No, it's the reptilian Jew, right? Overlord of them all. I kid somewhat. It could be that above the Bibi Netanyahu level, we've got a few more behind the scenes. Because if you can see them publicly, they're not the top. George Soros, it's the obvious one that you can point to. There are people much richer than him who make him look like he's a pauper. Seriously. You look at the Forbes list, that's nothing compared to the people who really own the world. But at the level of presidential races, things like that, even though the Jew wins either way, essentially, they could really be out for blood in some instances. And it seems that Israel and Russia may have actually conspired together to hand the victory to Trump. The media is telling us this over and over again, right? The hacking scandals. They don't really talk about Israel. But that should be the one that we are talking about. And this is not to say that, obviously, that I wanted Clinton to be in there. But the Likudnik faction very well could have been behind many of these releases that we saw throughout the campaign. WikiLeaks, Edward Snowden. Have they ever come out against Israel? Israel has been spying on us well before Jonathan Pollard and well after. They have been penetrating every level of our government. They've had a real special relationship. And they would be the people to really point to with all the spying operations. But we're not seeing lots of crimes revealed by WikiLeaks or Snowden. We're not seeing that, we're not seeing Russia or Israel being tied into any of these really nefarious operations that have been revealed by Julian Assange and his compatriots, have we? So that makes me wonder whether or not Pizzagate might have actually been put out there by the Russians and by Israel, perhaps together. Israel would have all of those emails. I spoke with BB9, Blackbird 9, about the Israeli spying operation that they have running throughout the United States intelligence operations. He was an NSA contractor, a whistleblower, and essentially he said that everything we have in terms of intelligence is being routed right to Israel. Just it's a physical split, and an exact copy goes right over to Israel. So they could have had these emails. Now, I don't want to imply that this is a fake story, but it could have been put out there by people who are not our friends. And I've brought up this point before. So it could very well be true and was used as a way to do a number of different things. To get Trump elected, to take down Hillary. You had David Seaman, who is a Jew and a Zionist, and he is now the Pizzagate guy, and he got all this coverage for coming out and writing for the Huffington Post about Hillary's health, which again could be something very real, and it's not a hoax, because she was out there acting ridiculous. Looking at the evidence, it looked like something was seriously messed up with Hillary's health. The same thing with Pizzagate. Looking at this evidence, there's something really messed up going on. So we could be dealing with completely legitimate information, a conspiracy being revealed, but the reasons why it's being done are to bring in this Likudnik government and basically take away all investigation or just interest in the Epstein scandal, which was embroiling both Hillary and Donald Trump. Hillary and, of course, Bill and Donald Trump. And so we don't hear anything about Trump's rape case that he essentially had dropped through intimidation. And that was scheduled for November of last year. Now, couldn't have that as he's getting elected. So we have to really think about this. And also look at the reaction from the DNC, which would be coming through then, Obama as the lame duck president. Who has he come out against? Russia for supposedly the leaks. So the damaging leaks, which they're not even refuting. They expelled 34 ambassadors from Russia. So that's in retaliation, essentially, for Pizzagate. If you really just follow the logic, that's what we're talking about here. And Israel snubbed at the UN. Was this a response to Israel being part of this leak which sunk the DNC? It could be. It could be that these factions are literally at war with each other over who is going to fleece all of us. So don't think that somebody is on your side just because they give you some truth. Like Alex Jones, for example, who stopped covering Pizzagate mysteriously, and then there was Joe Biggs getting let go as well. Says that that wasn't the case. But yes, Alex Jones has been quite something to behold. Early in his career, or earlier, he had come out and said, you know, it's not Israel, it's the UN. It's the UN that's, you know, the bad guys. And then, for a little while, he was somewhat critical of Israel. And now, he is pretty much gone, he's gone overboard in it's not the Jews type of rhetoric. And here's a recent call-in to Alex Jones that I will play right here to illustrate this point. This was from December 27th, 2016, so just last week.
All right, now I'm going to go to these callers here. I don't care if people disagree with me. In fact, I'll go to the head of the line if you do. But I'm not going to go into a little victory lap about how I'm a Russian agent or I'm an Israeli agent. If you want to get to topics of why you don't like Israel or why you do, that's fine. I'm just not going to do the, you're a Vatican agent, you're a Russian agent, you're a Jewish agent. I've already heard it all. I'm an agent of the Republic, of prosperity, of justice. That's what I stand for. I built this myself with the listeners. I know people that live in their mother's basements can't believe that anybody could actually do something on their own, but I believe in you. So you have free speech. We don't screen your calls. But I'm not going to sit here and hear the mental illness. Okay, if you want to say something bad about Israel or good, that's fine. My point is, I'm an honorable person. I told you why I'm against overthrowing Israel. It's going to start a frickin' nuclear war. Same reason I don't want to have a war with Russia. This is the reality. Israel's not going anywhere. Why is Obama Machiavellianly doing this now? To create a giant crisis. They're shooting down Russian aircraft. They're killing Russian ambassadors. All hell's breaking loose. The head banker for NATO just got murdered. Today, executed in Belgium. This is the real world. Jeremy in Kansas, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, Alex. Thank you. If we want to turn Trump into an asset of the Republic rather than a tool of vulture billionaires, the military-industrial complex, and the Zionist power configuration, then you're going to have to start telling the truth about Zionist power in the United States of America.
Okay, you're on the air. Did you hear what I said? You can say whatever you want, but this BS about me, you're on the air. You're being listened to right now, big man.
Yeah, so the main group that's very dangerous around Trump is the Netanyahu faction. This goes down into Trump's deputy campaign manager, Michael Glaser, who is actually the deputy under Eisenberg, who transferred the real estate to Trump's good friend Larry Silverstein weeks before it was blown into smithereens on live television with thousands of living human beings on it. This man, Michael Glaser, also worked for the parent company of Genie Energy, which has massive energy interests in the Golan Heights, which is part of what this destabilization of Syria is about. On the board of Genie Energy in Israel, you also see the parent company having people like the Rothschild, Rupert Murdoch. It's, of course, bipartisan. Bill Richardson is on the board. Dick Cheney is on the board. Okay, these are the people that are surrounding Trump right now. Mike Flynn is not yet a patriot. He needs to speak the truth about September 11th treason that was done by Zionist power in the United States of America. And he wrote his book with Michael Ledeen, the arch neocon who's helping architect the clash of civilizations. You need to help us speak these truths. Have on people like Dr. Kevin Barrett, Christopher Bowman.
I appreciate your call. I mean, there you go with who you're saying I should have on. I'm not going to get into that first person you mentioned. See, you just got on air, unscreened. You just said what you wanted to, and then it went back to, I need to have on. I'm covering up. And it's the same mental illness. Just you do it each time, you know. and that you need to, even though they're on the air.
Mental illness, huh? Isn't that interesting that he used the words mental illness? Oh, you should be medicated. You shouldn't be allowed to have a gun. You're mentally ill. Saying I need to expose Jewish power. That is mental illness. But it's suggesting that somebody look into Jewish power. Mental illness. Crazy talk. Absolute crazy talk. Now, Alex Jones is partnered up big time with Roger Stone, who Nick has dealt with and is dealing with on his show. And his connections with Roy Cohn, people have finally really caught on with that one. Doesn't seem like they ever cite the source, though. And this is a very important connection because Roger Stone might be the person who was really key in orchestrating Pizzagate. He is the dirty tricks master. That is what he does for campaigns. He is a sexual degenerate himself and knows a lot about this world. And it seems he was also in touch through someone else with Julian Assange and had information about what was coming with the leaks. Also, Dr. Steve Pachesnik was talking about these scandals, about the underage sex scandals, not necessarily referencing Pizzagate, but before the election, saying that there was going to be a counter coup against the Clintons, everything would be all right, and we'll see justice coming here. And Roger Stone has tweeted about Pizzagate on his Stone Zone thing. He must be a Jew. If he's not, he's one strange looking Goy, and Steve Pachesnik, the Psy War Jew. Alex Jones calls him the Spy Master. This was a high-level psychological expert in intelligence and still speaks for the intelligence community in his little broadcasts. So are we seeing Jews behind most of these leaks? It seems like they could be. Oh, I know, but the Jewish media was all against Trump. Well, what's Seth Rich, right? What was his murder all about? It was a Jew coming out and showing how the DNC was rigging it against the communist Jew Bernie Sanders in favor of Hillary. And Julian Assange essentially said, yes, Seth Rich was the guy. He didn't actually admit it, but that's what he essentially said. So we've got what looks like controlled opposition running cover for Trump and the cabal. And I think that could be what the Obama snub is actually all about as well, is to make Trump and also Vlad, right, look good in some ways. Obama's not very popular. Okay, so when, and really neither is the UN, at least not here in America. Not really. So you've got all these people who see this very unpopular lame duck president come out against Israel, and then it becomes, what? You're against Israel? You're with Obama? What, you're with the terrorists? You're with that Muslim president? Even though he was labeled the first Jewish president back when it was all hope and change and rainbows and cuddles. Yeah. The first Jewish president has become this Muslim terrorist who hates freedom, hates the free world, hates the only democracy in the Middle East. This bright, shining beacon of freedom. Our greatest ally. Greatest. Absolute greatest. After the break that's coming up shortly here, what I'm going to be doing is talking a little bit more about this supposed snub, and then doing a brief overview of this article up in the Tribune, The End of Israel 223 Code, and adding in a little bit there, just because it is pretty interesting, and takes a look at the possibility that maybe Israel is being set up for destruction, a controlled demolition. Maybe it wasn't even meant to last. Maybe they'll have a real or fake Holocaust. Oy vey, Shoah, tears. And never again can you object to us ruling you. We have to be protected. And that is what they are really pushing now. Trump saying, we have to protect Israel. Israel, to me, is very important. We have to protect Israel. Let me actually pull this up. Can we get this? Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Thank you, Satan. Yes, we can. Thank you, Satan. Let's play this here. Yes. So we have all of the alt-right, of course, fine, a good percentage of them supporting this and just, you know, making the same excuses they did throughout the campaign, because he was saying the same things then as well. And this is what we're seeing all over, though. All of this rising nationalism that so many of the alt-right, alt-light, new-right people are supporting, is just so very much Zionist. And I say Zionist because I'm speaking specifically of their support for Israel. I'll call something Jewish when it's Jewish. Geert Wilders, for example. Israel is one of us and fighting our war, so let us support Israel and for ourselves. He tweeted out that video where it was repurposed. There's some animation where this big rock creature is trying to stop this boulder from destroying a castle, and it's doing its best, and it something gets nicked on the castle, and all the people start boycotting Israel. You know, they're very upset about this. It's a big Jewish rock creature who's stopping the boulder of Islam. Okay? And so that's what's represented. Israel is standing in between Islam and the West. And the people get a little upset because the rock creature might have damaged a little something. And then what happens is, Israel lets the ball go and it rolls right over. So that's what you have right here. That's how they view themselves. That's how they want us to view them, rather. I'll be back in just a little bit. Stay tuned. Greetings, this is Kyle Hunt, host of The Solar Storm, coming to you every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. I deal with topics related to our past, present, and most importantly, our future. The show has a lot to offer. Occult knowledge, insightful interviews, hard-hitting analysis, and essential inspiration. I know we are living in a world filled with darkness, but there is a light at the end of the tunnel. We have the power to take back control of our world and reclaim our destiny. But we're running out of time. We need all hands on deck. Will you do your part? Join the struggle and fight for our freedom. Until our destiny is a calling. welcome back. Talking about our greatest ally in the whole wide world, Israel. They've done so much. They always just give back. They keep giving and giving and giving. We're just selfish takers. These chosen ones are just so generous. Yeah. So this article titled, "Has Obama Abandoned Israel? What You're Not Being Told." Now, I want to make something clear. I do not really endorse the anti-media, but they do have some articles out there that are I'm able to republish, and they do have some good content, such as this one. You'll see in the beginning, they're referencing Chomsky, so I'll deal with that after. This is by Darius Shatamasibi of Anti-Media. In 2011, linguist and foreign policy critic Noam Chomsky was asked whether he thought Obama was as bad as George W. Bush, to which Chomsky responded, "He's worse." Asked why, Chomsky cited Obama's use of the UN veto at the Security Council level, which killed a resolution condemning settlement expansions that Israel is building in 2011. After that, Obama was famously known for placing very few limits on Israel, with the exception of blocking an arms transfer during Operation Protective Edge, for example. There was also the supposed fallout between Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Obama over the Iranian nuclear agreement last year, but that agreement had nothing to do with curbing Israel's power in the region. Anyway, anyone paying attention to the Iranian nuclear issue knows the agreement was largely symbolic and meaningless, as sanctions targeting Iran have continued quite dramatically. Just recently, the Obama administration approved the largest military package to Israel to date. Per this agreement, the U.S. will provide Israel with $38 billion worth of military aid if Israel, in turn, promises to use that money to purchase equipment from American suppliers. If there was ever any need to prove that Washington is in bed with the military-industrial machine, this deal alone kills any debate on the issue. Israel is the largest recipient of foreign aid in the world, with the exception of Afghanistan and Iraq, which receive military funding due to the U.S. military's long history in the countries. This aid increased under Obama. According to Colin Powell's leaked emails, Israel also has a stockpile of at least 200 nuclear weapons, and the U.S. is well aware of this fact. Further, since Obama took office, the population in Israel's settlements rose dramatically from 100,000 to 600,000. So that's a drastic increase with the settlements. 100,000 under Bush to 600,000 under Obama. Just a quick note about the debt. Yeah, it also doubled, went up to about $20 trillion. That's great. Really feel comfortable with our future with that debt. So obviously, we know what we have to do. That debt is meaningless to us. It is not our debt. Okay, back to the article. In a recent speech, as transcribed by Time, John Kerry affirmed that no administration in U.S. history has done more for Israel's security than Barack Obama's. "Our military exercises are more advanced than ever. Our assistance for Iron Dome has saved countless Israeli lives. We have consistently supported Israel's right to defend itself by itself, including during actions in Gaza that sparked great controversy. Time and again, we have demonstrated that we have Israel's back. We have strongly opposed boycotts, investment campaigns, and sanctions targeting Israel in international This is John Kerry. Why is this transcribed so poorly? Whenever and wherever its legitimacy was attacked, and we have fought for its inclusion across the UN system. This support for Israel runs deeper than most Americans are aware, to their own economic detriment. As Kerry noted, in the midst of our own financial crisis and budget deficits, we repeatedly increased fundings to support Israel. In fact, more than half of our entire global foreign military aid financing goes to Israel. And this fall, we concluded an historic $38 billion memorandum of understanding that exceeds any military assistance package the United States has provided to any country at any time. Last Friday, the Obama administration abstained from a UN Security Council resolution vote to condemn Israel's settlements expansions. The resolution contains no enforcement provisions. It is not as if NATO is going to enforce it with a no-fly zone. Yet Israel warned New Zealand that its support for the resolution would be construed as an act of war and has recalled their ambassador from the country. President-elect Donald Trump has called the UN sad and has basically vowed to up the ante on U.S.-Israeli relations once he takes office. Why? The world is almost unanimous in its verdict that Israel's settlement expansions are illegal. The UN resolution merely affirms this. Sure, Obama could have vetoed it, but what difference would that make? Israel is already well underway in its complete disregard of the resolution, is expanding the settlements anyway. The Jewish state is still set to get its $38 billion worth of arms. They still have the Iron Dome defense system, and they still have nuclear weapons. Further, Obama is well aware that in less than a month, the United States is set to get a new president who is more than likely to provide unfaltering support for Israel. This resolution does nothing to stop that. If anything, it has only strengthened the reasoning behind Donald Trump's approach to Israel. If all of this amounts to the U.S.'s abandonment of Israel, perhaps the meaning of the word should be changed. Let's not forget that this is a country which is currently under investigation for war crimes, a fact that failed to give Obama pause when he pledged $38 billion in military aid. There's only one group of people in that region who should feel abandoned. And it also should be added that funding Israel, who is not a signatory of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, is actually illegal. So the United States is doing something against its own laws here. But of course, no one is being held accountable because it is our greatest ally, the shining beacon of light in the Middle East, and they deserve all of our money because they are chosen and we are goyim. Yes, that's the logic of that. And just mentioning about places like anti-media that and other people that come at this from sometimes a leftist perspective, they'll say things about Israel is evil because it is an apartheid regime and because it engages in these nationalist policies. No, they give nationalism, ethnic politics, a bad name. We should not admire them. We should not want to emulate them. They give what we stand for a very, very bad name. And that's why it's absurd when people like Richard Spencer say they have respect for Israel and how they conduct their business. There is no reason that you would need to treat people the way that they do there if you are proud of your people and you are strong in your convictions, if you are independent and you don't need to be a parasitic race, then you don't need to abuse the people that are around you. You just don't. And they compare themselves all the time to the colonial experiment in the United States, the founding of the country, and the pioneers, the people who went out west. That is a very inaccurate comparison for many, many reasons because of the very nature of the land itself, of the times of how some of our people are brought here as refugees, of all of the treaties that were broken not by the people themselves, but by a tyrannical United States government. So no, BB, you are not the white people and the Palestinians are not the poor, oppressed Indians. That comparison is a fail, and you wanted to show the American people that you are somehow this kind of, you're just this beacon of new freedom. You're just doing what the Americans did, and it's your land because God, Yahweh, promised it to you thousands of years ago. Yeah, you hadn't been there for thousands of years. Yeah, it was only about 3% Jewish in the 19th century, if that. But no, it's yours. You belong there because Yahweh said so. And your God is the only one that is correct. Now, the thing is, it could be, as I said, that Israel might not go greater. Maybe the agenda isn't to make Israel greater again. Some people would like to do that. But perhaps the real plan, or at least a plan of a powerful faction, is to see Israel go down. A controlled demolition, Or maybe it's a last-ditch effort, that they're just willing to trade Israel for some larger objective. Maybe they need to have all kinds of nationalism go down so they can achieve white genocide, and then it doesn't really matter because they think they're going to be ruling over the whole world. They don't need to just have little old Israel. Maybe that's it. Maybe they'll let it go for a little while. As I said, maybe they'll have a Holocaust or a fake Holocaust so that they can just cry even more tears. What is it? Something like 7 million people in Israel right now? 7 million Jews? So maybe they get 1 million of them out there and, oh, 6 million burned up because of the evil Muslims. And I bet some neo-Nazis were working with those Muzzies. So, yeah. Our greatest ally. Isn't it just amazing? You have nationalists, so-called nationalists, in Europe, in the United States, who see the terrorism that is going on, who know all about the Mossad, but seemingly can't or don't want to put two and two together and see these operations for what they are. Operation Gladio type of staged terror. Some of it might be real. People might die. But when we're talking about ISIS, we know who ISIS really is. We know about their connections to the other intelligence agencies as well. This is not just this Islamic terrorism that exists in a vacuum. And some people out there are willing to accept what we say about these being synthetic operations and Jews being behind them. But they say, don't worry about exposing it. Come on. People aren't going to get it. We'll just go along with the narrative, blame it on the Muzzies, and we'll get to kick out the Muzzies. And it's the same thing I hear with Trump over here about why we shouldn't expose all these Jews and shouldn't worry about that. The main issue that needs to be dealt with is getting these brown people out of America, and Trump is going to do that with the wall, and he's going to deport them. Yeah, come on. Do you still hear him talking about that? Have you heard about him going back on the whole drain the swamp thing? Newt Gingrich even said, oh yeah, Trump's done with the whole drain the swamp talk. And then he had to come back and say, well, it's still on. Draining the swamp's still on. But I guess Trump has recently said that, he never really liked the drain the swamp stuff anyway, but people liked it, so he went with it. He told you idiots what you wanted to hear. And I'm not talking to all the renegades out there. I'm talking about the people who were hating on us renegades because we weren't having fun on the party bus. He told you what you want to hear. And you just closed your ears, put your fingers in them and said la 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 when you heard anything you didn't want to hear. Oh, those are just words. That's one of the excuses I heard. Those are just words. So anyway, let's get back to this idea of Israel going down. This post over on the Tribune by Lorenz Krauss, the end of Israel 223 code. Now, just immediately looking at this, I see 223, and I know that backwards, which is how Jews read from right to left, is 322, that skull and bones number. I'm only going to read the beginning of this article. It's a little bit lengthy. In 2013, Henry Kissinger let it slip that Israel would be toast in 10 years. 2023 would be 10 years later. In gematria, since zero doesn't count, that reduces to 223. That promises to be an interesting year. 223 goes back to 22,300 Levites in the Bible. 223 is also Synagogue of Satan and Masonic. Levites are the big Jews, God's special ministers, the Kohens. Lackey Jews get to be thrown under the bus. With the recent UN resolution 2234 condemning Israel, the Israeli ambassador said it would be the 223rd resolution condemning Israel. So, UN Resolution 2234 was the 223rd resolution condemning Israel. Isn't that interesting? Can you believe it? What are the odds this resolution gets by with a U.S. abstention? Jews should put their paranoia to good use on that one. What does it mean? Their own government is finally screwing them. America will sell them out. Israel will go down in flames. Israel has no nukes because there are no nukes. We can argue about that one later. Iron Dome is just fireworks. Yes, that is correct. Dumb Israeli Zionists are being played by their own government and the big Jews. They have been given a false sense of security, and the U.S. will soon pull the rug out from under them. It's not the first time Jews were sold out, but it will be pleasant to see them feel the sting of betrayal. When the Jews are paranoid of fellow Jews, that's good for Goy. All right, so you go check that out if you'd like. One thing to point out here as well is 223. It can be turned into a number of different letter formations. 223 in English would be BBC. 22 could also be seen as V, and 3 would be C, so VC. Or you can do it as 223, in which case it would be BW. I'm not saying there's any meaning to those things right there, but just showing you how you can break down certain numbers and, well, translate them back to letters. Definitely interesting. And when I was searching for images and also searching for videos about this topic, I came across a video titled Conflict in Israel and Palestine, Crash Course World History 223. So it's by this Jew with the last name of Green. It has almost 4 million views. This guy does crash courses in world history. But his 223rd one is about the conflict in Israel and Palestine. What are the odds? And even though this guy's a Jew, he is fairly critical of Israel, kind of from the leftist Jew perspective. Or rather, he's just being a little bit more honest than we see oftentimes in our media. Now, when I say our media, I mean the U.S. television media, which is not our media. Excuse me. But I watched this. It was pretty good. It's an overview just of the timeline. And the point is that this connection is too hard to ignore. It's one of the first results if you're searching about Israel and terrorism and things. It's a very highly viewed video. So this 223 codes does seem to be relevant. But of course in the video, he's not going to talk about the King David Hotel bombing, which involved Prime Minister Menachem Begin before he was Prime Minister in 1946. An attack against the British before they got their Jewish state. Didn't talk about 1954 Operation Susanna, also known as the Levant Affair. They firebombed American and British people in Egypt to blame it on the Egyptians to try to thwart efforts to have better relations between the British and Americans in Egypt. And then USS Liberty, another false flag. Well, they wanted it to be a false flag. If they sunk the ship, they wanted to blame it on Egypt. But they didn't sink it. And actually, I've been reading about the USS Liberty. It's a fascinating story. I've been reading Phil Turney's book, which I think is available through the Barnes Review. Somebody sent it to me. And Dave Gaharry, who's been a guest on the program, he wrote quite a bit of it. So, with the USS Liberty, oh, it's just such a sad story for some of these guys. Israeli planes flying all around that morning. They knew exactly who it was. And they came up and just opened fire, dropped napalm, shot multiple torpedoes at it, only one hit, and they were able to limp on. The U.S. had destroyers in the area who were they had their jets scrambled. Lyndon Johnson got on the line with the commanders of these ships and told them, you got to recall those jets now. the president getting on. Because actually, who was it that tried to overrule it? I forget. Essentially, these guys were going to disobey an order from up high until Lyndon Johnson got on. Because they had their jets scrambled to go help this American ship that was being attacked. But Lyndon Johnson said he didn't want for his good friend Israel to be embarrassed. Yeah, he didn't want them to be embarrassed. He didn't want to embarrass Israel. And it was completely covered up. That's why we don't see movies about the heroes of that day. There was a doctor who took shrapnel, maybe I think it was 12 different pieces, to his abdomen. It cauterized the wound because it was so hot. He also took a bullet to the leg. What he did was he just strapped on a life jacket and he went to work on all of these injured sailors. What was it? 170 injured, something like that. He went to work on these guys. 28 hours on his feet. 28 hours on his feet doing all of this very serious work on these injured sailors. After strap, he was bleeding down his legs. He just strapped on a life vest to hold in his guts. We don't see movies about that. Hey, he ended up getting a Silver Star. Israel paid out a little bit of money to the victims' families, and then a little bit more for the damages to the ship. This thing totaled $13 million. Oh, if we only knew. If we only knew about that. The Hebron massacre with Baruch Goldstein. Was about 130 casualties with that one too. 30 dead. Just went into a Palestinian mosque and just shot the place up. And how there's shrines to this guy in Israel. I think they finally had to take down the shrine. But it'd be a little harder for the Jewish media to browbeat us about, oh, Dylan Stormroof, rising nationalism, terrorism, white supremacist. If we knew about Baruch Goldstein. Well, if we knew that the media was Jewish in the first place, it would be a hell of a step in the right direction. But if we knew a little bit about the history of terrorism, of attacking the U.S., of the Hebron massacre, of September 11th, and the dancing Israelis, and all that goes along with that. If Americans only knew. Here's a quote. A quote from our greatest ally in the whole world. Benjamin Netanyahu. Said this in 2008, April 16th. Now, I want you to think about cui bono. Who benefits? Who benefits from the attacks of September 11th? Well, listen to this quote. We are benefiting from one thing, and that is the attack on the Twin Towers and Pentagon and the American struggle in Iraq. Mariv quoted the former prime minister as saying. He reportedly added that these events swung the American public opinion in our favor. So who benefits? Let Bibi tell you. We are benefiting. We are benefiting. Yeah. So we have... So apparently this Islamic extremism, this terrorism taking place all across Europe and the United States as well. And we're just supposed to go along with the narrative. That's what a lot of people, even the alternative media on the alt-right and all the rest, they want us to do. Oh, come on. You know, it allows us to further our narrative. No, it allows them to further their goals. And they're willing to throw you a few bones with your narrative. But once they get this police state really fully, even more in place for their solution, what about them pulling out a few more Dylan Stormroofs and coming after you? When Trump was talking about shutting down the internet and killing terrorists and their families, do you think he's only talking about Muslims? No, he's talking about anti-Semites as well. Doesn't want any threat to his beloved Israel, or to his family, or to his fortune, which is completely tied in with world Jewry. Trump's administration has more, together, even just I think it's about the top five of them, has more than about a third of the United States population combined. A handful of people in Trump's administration has more than a third of the United States combined. Oh, this populist revolution. This is the new nationalism sweeping across the Western world. Hip, hip, hurrah! Trump, Trump, he's our man. If he can't do it, no one can. Come on, get in, guys, for the big win. We did it! We won! Hooray! 2017 is going to be the best year ever with Trump. We're going to MAGA. He's going to MAGA with the Goldman guys. Oh, it's a sick joke what I'm seeing put forth. A sick, sick joke. After I come back from the break, I will go over a little bit more about Israeli terrorism and how they are really the masters of terror and a lot of the dark arts of war. And I will also be playing a few more clips and taking your calls. So please do think about calling 747-222-8807. Again, 747-222-8807. A big shout out to the secret chat room, secret think tank that exists, for a lot of tips. We've got some great people in there who help to make shows a whole lot more interesting by connecting some dots. Sinead, still a good part of this network, though she's not doing shows, adding her bits. Nick Spiro, always a great source of information on these topics. He actually had posted, even though I didn't see it, the 17-second clip of Trump talking about loving and supporting Israel. And Hugh and some others who shall go unnamed, as I don't know if they want me to name them. But Hugh, Wyatt Man, always doing great work. Hope to see some great cartoons in 2017. And all you out there with creative talents, you better think about employing them as well. We need you. Our struggle needs you. And you sure might not be good at everything, but you got to be good at something. So work on what you're good at. Let's get together and really make it happen in 2017, the year of the apocalypse. A lot to look forward to. Stay tuned. Broadcasting do a great job presenting to you cutting-edge and hard-hitting content every day of the week. They do this all for free because they care about getting the truth out there and ensuring that we and future generations have a future worth living for. Our enemies have an endless supply of money to finance their operations, but we're able to work wonders working on a shoestring budget. If you appreciate a host's content, visit their archive page and find out how to support them, or even send a nice thank you note. We all appreciate it. Thank you for your consideration. Now back to the show.
Renegade Broadcasting. Hard-hitting talk radio.
To the show. I have a caller who I'll get to in just a second here. Looking at some of Nick's comments here, and it's from Red Ice, who did a lot in 2016 with all their streaming of MPI events, and they really changed their tune on quite a bit. And so what I'll do is I'll read these tweets out, and then I'll play a little clip from Sinead that involves a recent interview with Reactionary Jew. And so here we go with the tweets. Red Ice TV. Who knew wimps can't even listen to a Jew speak without pissing themselves? True strength. Oh, great sarcasm. They are behaving like bunch of hysterical women. And he's referencing a Lana tweet there. Come on, guys. We also spoke with Gilad Otzman, David Cole, Paul Gottfried, and Israel Shamir on the show once. Where's the outrage? Well, Henrik, I assume that's who's tweeting this out here. Those people were in at least some way critical of Jewry or the Holocaust narrative and things like that. Not proud Zionists, like Reactionary Jew. But what was really even worse than just having the interview itself and questioning, oh, should white nationalists be working with Jewish nationalists? Well, it's the way that Lana behaved. And so Sinead had put this together, and I might have suggested this jingle and worked on the lyrics with her. Here we have.
He's our greatest ally in all the land. He'll always reach out to lend you a hand. What in the world would you do without Reactionary Jew?
75% of Israeli aid must be used to buy U.S. arms. So it's effectively a subsidy for the U.S. arms industry. A lot of people don't know that. It's not like $3 billion for free, just like that. That's what Richard Spencer wants to do. I'd vote for Richard Spencer for president.
You should have work towards becoming prime minister of Israel one day.
I don't know if
maybe we have like an alt-right prime minister of Israel one day.
With this rhetoric, I don't know if I could. They discover this interview one day and all my publications. With the exception of maybe Iran and the Russian aid to Assad, we are the regional hegemon in terms of military. We're a very small country. We could flatten half the Middle East in an offensive, an offensive onslaught tomorrow.
And do it.
No, that's not a smart thing to do. Like, not necessarily. But also, you have people talk about we're genociding the Palestinians. You know, I think we've shown immense restraint, and we could genocide them tomorrow. You know, we could go in and flatten Gaza tomorrow with our fighter jets, but we don't do it. So it's obviously immoral. I don't believe in genocide. But I do believe in expulsion because I think it actually would be better for everyone involved.
Yeah, nationalism. This is why we need our separate countries.
So, if somehow you missed it, you had Lana there trying to out-Jew the Jew. Meaning, she was trying to be more genocidal and bloodthirsty there than Reactionary Jew. Reactionary Jew was just saying, We could if we wanted to. We could just kill them all. Lana says, why don't you do it then? Just kill the stupid Muzzies. Oh, we can have an alt-right Prime Minister of Israel. Oh, don't infight, Kyle. Don't call out Red Eyes. They're doing such great work broadcasting the MPI advance in their Weekend Warrior. And shilling for World Jewry. And Donald Trump, who's an extension of World Jewry. And if you can't see that, you're either a paid operative or an absolute idiot. I like to call them yidiots. So we had a reactionary Jew. That would be a great TV show. I look forward to hearing that jingle as I watch a syndicated television show. One day in the Reich, we're going to do this. The new Reich. When we're in charge of the media. All right. Let's now go to the call board and I will deal with some Israeli terrorism in a little bit. Just because he's saying, oh, well, you know, we could go in there and just bomb Gaza and flatten it. What has Israel already done? A guy that's speaking for Israel is saying we, Zionist Jewry, we, essentially, the Likud faction, could go in and do it, but we don't. We show enormous restraint. No, you don't. You liar. Oh, why should I expect a Jew not to lie? Come on. This is absurd. This is absolutely absurd. Okay, let's go to the call board. Hello, who is this?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi, this is Mike Mazzone.
Mike, I see you on Twitter quite a bit. Welcome to the show.
Yes, it's glad to be on. I'm enjoying it. Yeah, I just, actually, since you mentioned Twitter, I just retweeted something about George Soros and how he's overspent in the Democratic Party and to support this Democratic Party, and it kind of turned them away, some of his supporters, you know, some of the supporters in the Democratic Party. Now, at the same time, we know, as you've been saying, and I agree, that Donald Trump has been a big whore for Israel, so to speak. And at the same time, I'd also have to say that the Jews also have a fear of anyone who hasn't, I guess you could say, has on the other, they might not have control, enough control over, you know, so that's why I think they would spend more to oppose him. But I guess time will tell how loyal he is to his daughter and her husband and how they are going to be running things through the White House. Not really running things.
It's not just
them.
What would
you say about that?
It's not just Ivanka and Kushner, although Kushner might have some blackmail on Donald, but it's a whole faction. It's surrounding him. It's a miasma of Jewry absolutely around Donald J. Trump and his family, business, political, and private life, just permeating. So it's not just Kushner, but I think that a lot of the opposition to Donald Trump was something of a psyop, and they they might bring out some kind of civil war scenario where you have, right now, Obama saying that Russia did it. Russia fixed the vote. What does that imply? That we've got an illegitimate president coming in. Will there be a faction in the United States, maybe the DNC aligned with the UN, actually kind of battling it out? I don't know. Maybe they might use this. And then we'll have people, American patriots, siding with Russia. Russia and the Trump faction and Israel. I don't know. They might pull out some crazy scenarios. They might pull out all the stops. Who knows? But it seemed to me the whole time like Trump was the guy that they wanted in there. As much as it looked like Hillary was just favored to win the whole time, I think a part of that was the psyop to get us to really believe in Trump and see him as a savior instead of a steam valve.
Yes, indeed. And beyond that, I was looking into some of the how that would affect the Israeli influence in the whole region if there was more, I guess you could say, cooperation with the Putin regime, which is also heavily influenced by Jews as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a geopolitical nightmare, in my opinion. It's just kind of funny to me to see so many people being so pro-Putin, because Obama is anti-Putin. That's one of the main reasons. I mean, there are plenty of reasons why people are pro-Putin, but they overlook all the reasons not to be, because he's being portrayed in the U.S. media, which is so highly distrusted, as being this evil man, and people look to that, and it's reverse psychology. They say, well, if they're saying that he's a bad guy, then he's got to be the good guy in all of this. Same thing with Trump.
That's right. We'll also see that, in the past, one of the things that I admired about Putin was he had expelled a certain one of the Jewish oligarchs from the oil industry named Mikhail Khodorkovsky, if you've ever heard of him.
Yes.
Yeah, he was looking to bring some of the nationalized Russian oil secrets onto Wall Street to profit from them, rather than allow the Russians to expand their drilling efforts into other nations, including, I know, Vietnam. They had a deep drilling operation in an oil reserve that was considered depleted, but they discovered new technical means to drill deeper in and extract more oil, which also kind of contradicted some of the prevailing ideas about oils having biotic origin as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, they're definitely not. It's not a fossil fuel. It's just absurd that the idea that oil comes from dinosaur bones. In any event, a lot of the things that are going on in the Middle East could definitely be explained over oil, with Syria being a prime example here, and of course just control in general, but also the greater Israel plan, which we've discussed a number of times here on the network. But as I mentioned, it looks like they might be willing to throw Israel under the bus to achieve some other greater objectives. Now, the article I referenced about the 223 code, it is not saying that this is definitely what is going to happen, but it's something to keep your eye on and think about as a possibility, because there is some evidence for that being a possibility. Have you looked into this at all or given it any consideration, or do you think that pretty much the greater Israel plan is what they are seeking?
It does definitely seem like the greater Israel plan has more credibility than going for an alternative route. They've invested heavily in this, and they built that huge base in Baghdad itself, which they want to have as being like a second Vatican, the way Zionist influence has spread throughout Europe from the Vatican itself inside Rome for many hundreds of years. And they would look to expand it east into like a greater Israel. And as far as their plans to build like a more of an oil pipeline through that Asia territory there, all the way to whatever puppet regimes they have that they want to use to, I'd say, prop up the petrodollar. Because if you look into how the Federal Reserve System is enforced on the International Monetary Fund to make all these different countries use the U.S. dollar and U.S. dollar-based markets, it's part of the reason why they want their military dominance as far spread as they can get to keep, I guess you could say, to keep that petrodollar going. And it's not as discussed as much. It was in the past when it was more secure, but now that they know that it's in serious jeopardy, they're putting all stops into anyone, they're shutting down people who really do mention it anymore, or any kind of efforts to end the Fed. There was a big slogan for, I remember, in the past, and many media organizations rose up based on these types of awareness growing campaigns, I guess you could say. And now they're basically being told, you know, you don't stop talking about this and start going with this, and we'll keep you on the air. We'll help you out. So basically, if you chill for us, we won't go after you.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems to be why certain people are going the way of the Zionist Jews, is because they want to stay on air, because they want to stay in business. That's perhaps why Red Ice is doing what they're doing, why Alex Jones is doing what he's doing. And they're going along with the program. And I don't see Renegade going and doing that anytime soon. That's why we're Renegade. In any event, what you were saying about, you know, telling people not to talk about it, shutting down the discourse, I do really think that their moves to do so, with all of these different instances of people like Ursula Haverbeck getting shut down, along with thousands of others in Germany, but in Canada and in Germany, we have Monica and Alfred Schaefer, who have been on this network a few times, and all that they've gone through. There's also the singer from the UK, I believe she is, Alison Shablaz, and a number of other people, along with the legislation where they tried to pass a bill through the Senate to ban any kind of so-called anti-Semitic speech on campuses. They've also made it illegal to participate in BDS, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction of Israel. So they're pulling out all the stops here to try to stop us from delegitimizing their rule. And it does look like they're very concerned. And that's probably why they're rolling out people like Reactionary Jews, saying, hey, look, we're not all bad and some of us are on your side. And so that is actually a good sign, but we have to be very wary of all of the tactics that they will employ to retain their power.
Indeed, as I heard it before, as far as, in addition to being wary, being vigilant, that's one a term that I heard former Governor Jesse Ventura used a lot, staying vigilant. But at the same time, he also very much caters to the leftist side on the, you know, I guess you could say the Hegelian dialect that
he's completely anti-white.
Jewish media enforces to get them.
Yeah, he's completely anti-white.
Before.
Yeah. So, anything else you'd like to add before I get on a little bit more with Israeli terrorism and wrap up some of these notes here?
I would keep an eye on the specific casualty numbers that are going on in the, I guess we could say, the Middle East region and elsewhere, and see how much Trump would stick to his word as far as working with Russia, as far as the top ally, more than whoring for Israel, you might say. And thanks for having me on the show very much. Maybe I'll be on again sometime.
All right. Good to hear from you, Mike.
All right.
So let's keep in mind what just took place apparently last night. I haven't been able to really look into this in any depth. The big terror event in Istanbul, Turkey. So there we have yet another big event happening right there. There were some bombings that I saw in Turkey which were just absurd. Just big smoke bombs and supposedly, you know, a bunch of people died. No, it was a smoke bomb. It's like the Boston bombing, even weaker. Let me get to this article here while we still have some time for the break. This was written in 1982, a year before I was born. The History of Terrorism in Israel and Palestine. Israel's Sacred Terrorism. This is by Edward Herman. As quoted by Third World Traveler from South End Press. Excerpt from the Real Terror Network. And I'm getting this from ifamericansknew.org. So there you go. There are all the sources. Among the recipients of U.S. military and economic aid and diplomatic support, Israel occupies a unique place. Israel is generally portrayed by the U.S. mass media as the victim of terrorism, a characterization that is in part correct. Its own role as a major perpetrator of state terrorism is consistently downplayed or ignored, in accordance with a general principle discussed earlier, that violence employed by ourselves or by our friends is excluded from the category of terrorism, by definition. The record of Israeli terrorism, however, is substantial, far too extensive to even attempt to sample here. A small glimpse into the reality was given by Prime Minister Menachem Begin in a letter published by the Israeli press in August 1981, written in response to what he regarded as hypocritical criticism of Israeli bombing of Beirut, which killed hundreds of civilians. Begin offered a partial list of military attacks on Arab civilians under the Labour governments, which included over 30 separate episodes that left many civilians dead. He concluded that, quote, under the alignment government, there were regular retaliatory actions against civilian Arab populations. The Air Force operated against them. The damage was directed against such structures as the canal, bridges, and transport. The picture that emerges, former UN ambassador and foreign minister Abba Aban wrote in response, is of Israel wantonly inflicting every possible measure of death and anguish on civilian populations in a mood reminiscent of regimes which neither Mr. Begin nor I would dare to mention by name, end quote. Aban is harshly critical of Begin's letter because of the support it gives to Arab propaganda. He does not contest the facts. He even defends the earlier Israeli attacks on civilians with the exact logic which orthodox analysts of terrorism attribute to and use to condemn retail terrorists, namely that deliberate attacks may be properly made on innocent parties in order to achieve higher ends. Aban writes that there was a rational prospect ultimately fulfilled that afflicted populations, i.e. innocent civilians deliberately bombed, would exert pressure for the cessation of hostilities. Begin's list is indeed partial. It is supplemented by former Chief of Staff Mordecai Gur, who stated that for 30 years, from the War of Independence until today, we have been fighting against a population that lives in villages and cities, offering examples such as the bombardments that cleared the Jordan Valley of all inhabitants and drove 1.5 million civilians from the Suez Canal area in 1970, among others. The Israeli military analyst Ziv Schiff summarized General Gur's comments as follows. In South Lebanon, we struck the civilian population consciously, because they deserved it. The importance of Gur's remarks is the admission that the Israeli army has always struck civilian populations, purposefully and consciously. The army, he said, has never distinguished civilian from military targets, but purposefully attacked civilian targets even when Israeli settlements had not been struck. There are other examples that might be cited, among them the terrorist attacks against civilian targets, including U.S. installations in Cairo and Alexandria in 1954, carried out in an effort to poison relations between the United States and Egypt, the murderous attacks on the villages of Kibya, Kafr Qassam, and others, the shooting down of a Libyan airliner in 1973 with 110 killed as it was attempting to return to Cairo after having overflown the Sinai in a sandstorm, and many others. Lebanon has been a regular target of Israeli terrorism, including direct invasion and systematic bombardment of cities, villages, and rural areas that has caused hundreds of thousands of refugees and many thousands of casualties. Still another dimension of state terrorism is the brutal treatment of the civilian population in the occupied territories and the murder of Palestinians and the interchange of terror that has been proceeding in Europe for many years. Terrorism in the pre-state period was also extensive, another story that is largely unknown in the United States, where commentators like to pretend that terrorism is an invention of the Palestinians. The diary of former Israeli Prime Minister Moshe Sherat is a major source of evidence for a conscious policy of deliberate, unprovoked, cross-border attacks in which advantage was taken of superior military power and a servile Western propaganda machine with the intent of destabilizing neighboring states and provoking them into military responses. Charette was a foot-dragger in these enterprises, often shaken by the ruthlessness of the military establishment. Said, "The long chain of false incidents and hostilities we have invented, and so many clashes that we have provoked. the narrow-mindedness and short-sightedness of our military leaders, who seem to presume that the state of Israel may or even must behave in the realm of international relations according to the laws of the jungle. Charette himself referred to this long effort as sacred terrorism. Where Israeli state terrorism is acknowledged in the United States, it is almost invariably described as retaliatory, hence not criminal, even if regrettable. To cite only one example, consider the laudatory article by Amos Perlmutter on General Ariel Sharon in the New York Times Magazine. Commenting on Sharon's exploits as the commander of Unit 101 in the 1950s, Perlmutter writes that every time terrorists were captured in Israel, they would be interrogated to determine where they had come from. Then an Israeli force would return to the terrorist village and retaliate against them, an eye for an eye, or more often, two eyes for an eye. Perlmutter is a knowledgeable military historian who certainly knows that this is an outrageous falsehood. The retaliatory actions of Unit 101 were characteristically directed against completely innocent civilians in villages that had no known relation to terrorist acts. For example, Kibya, where 66 civilians were massacred in October 1953 in the first major operation of Sharon's Unit 101. There was no known connection between the villagers of Kibya and any terrorist actions against Israel. Israel angrily denied charges that its military forces were responsible for this massacre, pretending that the Retaliation Act was carried out by border settlers in Israel, mostly refugees, people from Arab countries, and survivors from the Nazi concentration camps. Oy vey. Commenting on this fabrication in his diary, Prime Minister Moishe Sharat observed that such a version will make us appear ridiculous, and any child would say that this was a military operation, as what was tacitly conceded much later. He writes that in the cabinet meeting following the massacre, "I condemn the Kibya affair that exposed us in front of the whole world as a gang of bloodsuckers." Told you they're vampires. "Capable of mass massacre, regardless, it seems, of whether their actions may lead to war. I warn that this stain will stick to us and will not be washed away for many years to come." Charette was wrong in thinking that this stain will stick to us. The typical response is a falsification of this sort practiced by Perlmutter in the New York Times. A critical commentary on Perlmutter's whitewash of the bloodthirsty General Sharon in the Nation fails to mention this remarkable suppression and distortion of the historical record. This single example is unfortunately quite typical of a long and ugly story of atrocities and cover-ups. That's the end, and oh, those cover-ups continue to this day. Last half hour coming up. I'll take your calls as well. Stay tuned. Doesn't mean you need to stop listening to Renegade Broadcasting. A good way to catch our shows while you're on the go is by finding us on TuneIn Radio. There is an app for your iPhone or Android, TuneIn.com. There are also plenty of other ways to access the 24/7 stream right on the homepage at RenegadeBroadcasting.com. And that first button underneath the player is a direct link to our page on TuneIn Radio. Please remember to follow us and share with your friends. welcome back to the last half hour of the Solar Storm right here on RenegadeBroadcasting.com. This is the first show for Renegade in 2017. If you want your voice to be heard on it, the number to call in is 747-222-8807. There is so much that could be discussed in terms of Israeli terror, how it connects to 9/11, the absolute horror of what it must have been like to be on the ship as Jews attacked their greatest ally. No, we're not their greatest ally. Get it right, Goy. They're our greatest ally. You know, there's actually a quote in the book from one of the survivors who was just horrified because these guys all thought Israel was their greatest ally. These are good buddies. They said, one of these guys said, "Friends don't do that to friends." And what did Bibi Netanyahu recently say? "Friends don't take each other to the friends don't take friends to the Security Council." Saying friends don't call out friends for war crimes, no. For doing anything illegal, friends wouldn't do that. No, BB, friends wouldn't attack each other time and again and spy on one another. Wait, do we spy on Israel? Do we? That's what Israel was saying with USS Liberty. Oh, we were spying on them and we were going to give secrets to Egypt. This is actually the argument that Reactionary Jew put forward. That we were spying on Israel's thing. They attacked us. We were being a bad friend. So they decided to attack us. Yeah. How much of the U.S. intelligence is dedicated to spying on Israel instead of spying for Israel? 0%? I don't know. Are there any honest elements within the U.S.? Are you all servile? I'd like to think not. It seems sometimes that you're not. But even when we've got these coups and counter-coups going on, apparently, it's just Jew versus Jew. So, either way, we lose if we side with you. If we get caught up in your little Bagalian dialectic, as a former host once said, then we lose. It's like Morpheus offering Neo the red pill and the blue pill. Funny note, Mike Cernovich is now selling literal blue pills, one of his new formulas. Literally selling blue pills. The red pill, where's that going to take you? Well, that's the one to take, right? All these reactionaries I exposed before, Neo reaction, all that. You should see it now, the new Jew state, come on. Especially, you should have seen it with Mencius Moldbug. In any event, the red pill, where's that going to take you? That's going to take you to Zion. You're going to go down the rabbit hole. Morpheus is going to go down your rabbit hole. Who wrote the damn Matrix? Who directed it? The Wachowski brothers, who are now transgender. Now they're women, both of them. They're now sisters. They have neo-vaginas. That's where you're getting your terminology from. Good job. Go to Zion and hang out with the Wachowskis. Cool. Let's go over to this clip here, dealing with our greatest ally. This is Dr. Alan Zaprosky talking, and he's a Jewish man, but, and I've heard some things about him, of course, being controlled opposition. Not very well may be the case, but what he's saying here, I think a lot of people should consider. We already know the things he's talking about at the beginning about how Israel has attacked us, but listen to what he's saying about talking to the military and to veterans and how this could be a way towards our actual salvation, our resurrection as a people in terms of getting the parasite off of us. Getting these bloodsuckers gone. So here we go. Here we are. Be back soon.
Alan Zabrowski, PhD, University of Michigan, is a 10-year U.S. Marine Corps veteran and a graduate of the U.S. Army War College. Now, not only that, but Dr. Zabrowski, correct me if I'm wrong here, not only are you a graduate of the U.S. Army War College, but you were director of studies there for some period of time. Is that correct?
That's correct, for 5.5 years.
5.5 years as director of studies at the U.S. Army War College. You know, of all the things that I would love to be able to have trailing behind my name, Dr. Zabrowski, being the director of studies at the U.S. Army War College would definitely be one of them.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. The only real winner from 9/11 and the wars that it spawned, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Iraq, and of course Iran on the coming up to the front burner, and Syria still simmering on the back burner, is Israel. No one else benefits. No other country benefits. That doesn't mean that people in the country don't benefit, but no other country does. What we need to stand up and say is, they did 9/11. Mm-hmm. They did it. I have had long conversations over the past 2 weeks with contacts at the Army War College and at Headquarters Marine Corps, and I've made it absolutely clear in both cases that it is 100% certain that 9/11 was a Mossad operation, mm-hmm. period.
Mm-hmm. Right.
9/11 has led directly to 60,000 Americans dead and wounded. A second way of looking at it, and I'm just going to be mentioning a few of the things that have sort of led me to this. A second thing is to look at the requirements for the conduct of this type of an operation. I mean, even taking the U.S. government's case, neither Al-Qaeda nor any other terrorist operation in the world has the discipline, the skills, the coordination, anything else you wish, even to pull off a simultaneous four-plane hijacking, much less do what they did.
Well,
Third, there's WTC-7, the collapse of the third tower. Yeah. Not hit by a plane, clear control demolition, and whatever one might think of the people that were supposedly in the plane. And let's buy the USG case for a moment. Let's say they were all there. You know, that this was a four-plane hijacking, and they decided to do it. There is no way in the world they could have had access to a single WTC building, much less three of them, to wire them for demolitions and bring them down. To wire a massive building for a controlled demolition, much less carry off a four-plane hijacking.
Well,
totally different capabilities. 90 to 96% of the mainstream media in the United States are either Jewish or Zionist owned.
That's right.
The fact that there was a clamp on discussions about 9/11, on suppression of WTC-7, whose collapse is virtually unknown in America, makes it very clear to me that the people who run it either knew, suspected, or feared that the evidentiary trail an investigation would reveal would lead straight back to Israel. Otherwise, there would have been a feeding frenzy and they would have gone at it. The services, all of the services, have their own newspapers, they have their own professional journals, widely read, well thought of, none of which is subject to the censorship and control that the mainstream media is. And that can have an effect. There are like 27 million veterans in the United States. The Veterans for Foreign Wars, the American Legion, each of the services has a veterans organization like the Association of the U.S. Army. There's money there, there's votes there, and as someone wrote about a week ago, you know, if you want to talk about the true 800-pound gorilla in the American lobby system, it's not AIPAC. It's the American military and the American veterans organizations. And if they ever get energized, that's where you can do it. Crystallize their opposition. That's where Congress suddenly changes. This is a critical year. The next 3 to 4 months are going into the going into an American congressional election year. And most members of Congress are extremely vulnerable. They're vulnerable when they go back to their home districts, because the local media also is large, like the military and service journals. The local media also is largely not bought or censored by the Zionists. Congress in Washington, the mainstream media, this is the enemy's battleground. That's where they have, that's their strength. That's where they have their resources, their visibility, their access, and their numbers, and where the members of Congress are also largely immune from their own constituencies at home. They have their own interests, and their interests are the local constituency. And these are the people that need to be hit. These are the people that need to be activated, and that's why, according to that principle we were talking about earlier, these are the ones who need to be the recipients of the message.
I think we definitely need to get people with military training experience on our side, but not work with the Pentagon. That was an interesting call in that Chris Dorsey had recently with Jim Fallon, the guy who deals with psychopaths, about his working with the Pentagon. And I think that we need to distinguish, be very discerning about exactly who we're aligning ourselves with. But there are many honest veterans who see how they're used and abused by Israeli interests, how the Jewish chosen ones sit back like an effendi and eat and reap the harvest as we go out and do all the work and fight their wars for them. I would like to do shows where I'm not dealing with our greatest ally. Oh, thanks, Jews. I would like to do shows, or not even do shows. I'd like to be living the life that we all should be living. A much more enriching, prosperous, and healthy life. We always need to have the vision of what is possible in our minds, to know what we're fighting for, what we could achieve. But we must remain focused on dealing with getting rid of this parasite. You can't get healthy when you've got ticks and leeches sucking your blood. They're covering your skin. And they're telling you, oh, actually, we're your greatest ally. You couldn't live without us. When in fact, they are bleeding you dry. You can't live with them. And so our body, the body of the people, is very sick right now. And we need to bring ourselves back to health. We need to remove these blood suckers that are attached to us. And that's not the only thing. We need to start developing healthier habits and allowing for our immune system to kick back in. We need to take charge, to take control of our thought processes, because recently we've been a zombie. We've had a parasite, like you see with some of these insects, where an ant will be taken over by a parasite and then it will serve the parasite. It's mind controlled. That's what's happened to us. We need to stop that. We need to reverse it. We need to gain control of our whole body, of our body politic, entirely. But we're not going to do that by pleading for a seat at the table, by asking for crumbs, by being thrown a bone and being oh so happy about it, by hearing the dog whistle and coming running for it and saying, oh, please, master, won't you pet me? Won't you show me a little affection? Disgusting. Disgusting behavior that I have seen. I want to hear your calls, though. 747-222-8807. Again, 747-222-8807. I'm so sickened hearing these people talk. the talking heads in the mainstream on the alternative, in particular, Bibi and Trump, they're one and the same, in my opinion. They're two Likudnik... What kind of word can describe them? Actually deplorable. Actually deplorable individuals. And I hate that people have embraced that term. I do not like it. I suggest you drop it. Why identify yourself as deplorable? Well, because the media attacked us Trump supporters and said we're deplorable people and Hillary Clinton, blah, blah, blah. No. Don't take their terminology. Don't get involved in these little fashy memes where you call yourself KGB agent such and such on Twitter because, you know, of the allegations that Trump is getting support from Russian agents. It's not cool to be a Soviet stooge. It's not cool to be a KGB agent. Are you retarded? Did you not watch Hellstorm? The state of our people's thinking abilities, critical thinking abilities, is so very lacking. I shouldn't have had to do nearly as many shows as I've done on certain topics for people to finally get it. We shouldn't have had to do so as a network. Then we could have progressed and started talking about what I consider more important topics, but not yet. The reason I say that is because we can do all the organic gardening we want and developing healthy lifestyles and all the rest. But while we still have an oppressive government that is ruled by Jews who hate us to our very core, anti-white policies all over, we can have our door kicked in at any time. We can be killed by some random thugs. We could have chemtrails dumped on us from the sky like we see all the time, poisoning our organic crops, or weather. The weather is being screwed with in very big ways. Look at the sky. Look at the weather. It's not man-made global warming as we think it is. The man-made part is what they're doing actively to the atmosphere, and is weather warfare. It's an act of war, and we just haven't responded. What they're doing is an act of war. They're poisoning us. What they're dropping on us is not for our own benefit. Even if it was all just psychological warfare, which it's not because that's not condensation up there. Something's coming down on us. It would be blocking out the sun, too. That's an act of war. Blocking out my damn sun? So I can't get all the full energy from it? What they're doing... it's so criminal in every single damn way. And they're poisoning us at so many different levels that unless they are stopped, we can't worry too much about some of those long-term objectives of things that we'd like to see. It must just be this vision that we have for what we're going to achieve in the future. And yes, we can implement parts of it, but we will not succeed unless we deal with this existential threat. These people want to see us dead and gone. No more future generation. Doesn't matter how many children you have and trying to outbreed the immigrants. No, not going to work. We can't take half measures. We can't have any more white flight or any of these other schemes that just pass the buck. Push things down for future generations to deal with. It's not going to happen. There won't be a future unless we deal with things here and now. So perhaps it's time to think about getting a little bit out of your comfort zone. Perhaps it's time to start thinking about doing more than you have done in 2017. Perhaps you should speak out. Perhaps you should get involved with the Apocalypse. Perhaps you should start producing some content for Renegade. Perhaps if we all do this, if we all do more, if we all dedicate ourselves to fulfilling that great, glorious vision that is within our reach, we will finally address this problem once and for all and be done with it, and no longer have to keep battling against this pernicious evil that is subverting us and rooting out the rot of our family, our world tree, and we can thrive. Just imagine the paradise that this earth could be. I'm not some kind of utopian, but I've seen glimpses of what natural beauty combined with Aryan ideals and ethic can achieve. I've seen glimpses of it. We could literally turn this world into a garden. We would be happy and healthy. We would not be worked like slaves. It is so very easy and simple. The National Socialists only started on a trajectory towards this. And they already, in that short time, with many different pressures and economic sanctions, achieved something amazing for the people, for the folk. Instead of consolidating ever more riches into ever fewer Jewier hands, like we've been seeing for the past so many years, as the rich keep getting richer and the poor just keep getting poorer. We need to change that. They think that they can escape what is coming, what they've helped to unleash. And they think they can hide out in their deep underground military bases, in their luxury bunkers. Maybe they're trying to go off to space. They're going off to some island somewhere. Or they've got a pill that will save them from X, Y, or Z virus and the chemtrails. They've got inoculations. Whatever the case may be, I don't think it's going to work. I've had some visions, some dreams about those who fled underground in those bases getting their just desserts. I've seen this. They think they're going to escape it. And what happens is on Earth, it doesn't go off. Whatever they wanted, the bomb, the plague, the mind control technology turning people all against each other, the clash of civilization doesn't happen. They go underground and they are sealed in their tombs. That's the vision that I don't mind seeing. And up here on the surface of this great world, we can turn what was once a prison into an absolute paradise. I assure you, even myself, not some kind of genius here, could, given the right power, set us on that track in no time flat. It's not actually hard. The hard part of running a civilization for these people is that they need to fleece people, be as parasitic off them as possible without getting them to revolt. It's a master-slave system. But what we need is the peer-to-peer distributed system. It is organic. It is healthy. It is our natural way. And it is what Blackbird 9, Frederick C. Blackburn, who's going to be my guest next week, is what he talks about quite a bit. And it is what we employ in our intelligence operations, which we are running here at Renegade. We are spreading a lot of intelligence, and we're being rather effective at it. And it has definitely caught the attention of the most powerful people in the world. They know exactly who we are and what we're doing. You might think we're some kind of small operation, but I'll tell you what, they don't think that. They see us as an existential threat, as they should. Yes. We will not stop until you are defeated. Until you're no longer ruling this world, until you're no longer raping the planet and our children, until you're no longer engaged in the business of selling our beloved world and our beloved children for a few extra shekels. We're not going to allow this degradation, degeneration, to continue much further. We have a lot of people who are absolutely fed up and will never go back to being your willing slaves. And we outnumber you, chosen ones. And guess what? Your God, he's not going to stop us. Your Yahweh, it's not going to work. We've learned your tricks. We know who you are. We know what's coming. And we shall be riding that wave while you drown in your own sorrows. Sorrows that you made for yourself. That will be your hell. You made it. Have fun. As to all of you out there who have joined me on this network, who are joining by listening and participating, I want to thank you for being part of something great. We will not fail because we cannot fail. We cannot fail. And I want to remind you that no matter how dark it might look at sometimes, oh, the light is coming. And these vampires are very, very scared. Don't let their mind control, their learned helplessness affect you. Don't let their controlled opposition agents get inside your head and steer you down non-productive paths. Be strong. Be true. Be brave. We need as many of our warriors as we can muster. And we will do wonders, working with only a few if need be. And our stand against these tyrants of the world will go down in the history books for generations to come. And future generations will celebrate our success. Thank you so much to everybody who listens, and especially everybody who supports the network. Couldn't do it all without you. Stay tuned for much more to come.
Discussion on restoration of European common law and the latest intelligence analysis. Peace and God bless.